right. That was the Magnetic Fields from their album 69 Love Songs from, I think that's from 1999. So long ago, almost 20 years. Oh my gosh. That was the song When My Boy Walks Down the Street. Before that, we heard Arthur Russell from Calling Out of Context, the song That's Us / Wild Combination. And at the top from Event Horizon, The Necessaries, that was the song More Real. Thanks so much for tuning in to this special episode. Thanks to Jake for taking my phone call earlier this week. And please have a great weekend. Check out Alternative Pride. Check out the Drag Carnival tonight. Check out Room's release party at the Toast on Sunday night. And have a great long weekend, everybody. And tune in tomorrow for Radio Campers doing their specials. Coming up next, we have more of the Full Spectrum Rainbow Waves radio special, so keep it locked in at CITR all day long. Going to close out with some La Tigra from their sophomore album, Feminist Sweepstakes. This is the song TGIF. Here we go.
Folks, the Pride Collective at UBC is an AMS resource group for LGBTQ+ folks. All our events and resources are free, so you should check us out on Facebook or come to Nest 2103 and say hi. We have so many fun events every week.
I August 3rd, our waves are going full spectrum rainbow. Tune in to CITR 101.9 FM or stream online at CITR.ca for full spectrum rainbow waves. 8 hours of pride-themed programming from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Featuring music from Devours, conversations on coming out stories from bisexual, pansexual, queer, and trans folks, the changing nature of queer media in Vancouver, the last dyke bar, and much more content. Happy Pride to all our listeners. CITR Tunes, Slam Poetry, Cheap Street Eats, Queer Pop-Up Library, and more. Pop by UBC's first outdoor pride picnic to celebrate the 15th anniversary of Positive Space on campus. Come for a fun and inclusive party outside the UBC bookstore on August 3rd between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. For more information, visit utown.ubc.ca/pride.
You know I'll give you my heart, and the rest is up to you. 15% of HIV-positive Canadians are immigrants or refugees from African nations where AIDS is endemic. Although advances in antiviral medication mean that HIV/AIDS is no longer a killer disease, AIDS continues to take lives. Misinformation and stigma amongst HIV-positive African Canadians is an ongoing cause of unnecessary death. Patience Nioni has been fighting for the lives of HIV-positive African Canadians for years. Since arriving in Canada as a refugee from South Africa and originally Zimbabwe, Nioni began the Afro-Canadian Positive Network in 2009. ACPNet offers support and education to HIV-positive African immigrants and refugees living in Canada. HIV antiviral treatment is free in Canada, and Nioni wants to see African Canadians access this medication. She, along with her assistant Jean, fight against stigma, misinformation, and cultural misunderstanding to save the lives of their fellow HIV-positive African Canadians. 2 weeks ago, myself, Alex DeBoer, and my friend Jen McDermott sat down with Patience Nioni and Jean to discuss this issue. To donate to the Afro-Canadian Positive Network, please email spokenword@citr.ca, that's spokenword@citr.ca. Any amount is greatly appreciated.
So, my name is Alex DeBoer, and I'm the Current Affairs Coordinator at CITR 101.9 FM, and I'm leading this interview with Jen McDermott.
My name is Jen McDermott, and I work for the Gender Sexuality Health Initiative.
And we're here with two guests, Patience and Jean.
Yes.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Patience. I'm the Director of Afro-Canadian Positive Network of BC.
And my name is Jean Saint-Guillaume. I'm the assistant of Executive Director of ACEPNED.
So we just wanted to start out by asking you, Patience, since you are the director of the Afro-Canadian Positive Network, if you could tell us a bit about your life, maybe prior to arriving in Canada.
Yeah, anyway, my journey started in Zimbabwe. I was a teacher, I'm a teacher by profession. Mm-hmm. So in Zimbabwe, I was teaching in rural areas. Mostly it was marginalized community. So during my spare time, I used to teach them, like to read and write. And I educated the youth also to talk about challenges they were facing, because in that community, it was a community of marginalized community. They didn't even know the importance of taking their kids to school. So all the kids, especially girls, they never educated their girls because they said it was a waste, like educating girls because they're going to get married and leave them. And I left Zimbabwe at that time. I was fighting for the girls. It was around the time when there was something called Gugurahundi, when the government was killing people from my province, Matabeleland. That's when the soldiers came in the evening and they wanted to take the girls as usual. I was on duty and everyone was in town, was in the city. So I asked them to bring a directive from the head, a letter from the head office to show that the girls were supposed to be taken to a camp. And wherever they were taking them, they were raping the girls. So I was fighting for the girls, and they ended up coming at night around 3 a.m. That's how I was kidnapped and ended up in South Africa, of which I didn't even know what was going to happen to me in South Africa. Mm-hmm. I found myself at UNHCR. I was not even intending to come to Canada. I was running away, fighting for my life. And when I was in South Africa, I was registered under the UNHCR. And the shock of my life, that's when I found out about my HIV status, which I didn't even know about. And what was overwhelming was when, as you know, that it's mandatory to have an HIV test before coming to Canada. Mm-hmm. And there was no counseling provided. That's when I had the shock of my life, when the doctor announced in front of everyone in the room. I digested that alone. I didn't have a family. I never believed it. I went to a number of places to go for tests to prove whether that was true. I couldn't even believe it until when I came to Canada. I was going places to places to have that HIV. And I was struggling with PTSD until I came to Canada. I ended up at St. Paul's Hospital and was taken to a transition home. From that time, I went to a second stage transition home. That's where I'm living. I moved from there after a year, and I'm still living in the same complex. And I didn't have family, even no one to talk to. I used to have a doctor's appointment, which was less than an hour. So we founded Afro-Canadian Positive Network. It's a linguistical, it provides services in a linguistical and appropriate cultural programs. We chose to found the organization because we wanted to bring a home away from home atmosphere and also support one another in an appropriate cultural way. We provide appropriate counseling.
Do you mind introducing yourself and your
And thank you. My journey, definitely. Mm-hmm. My journey started back home. I come from Congo. I left my country in 2002 and crossed through Rwanda to Uganda. And that's where I got my refugee asylum. So I lived in Uganda for 5 years. So I started this in Uganda, seeing my people from my country, having HIV, struggling to get support, going to the hospital. They didn't know the city well. They didn't know English well. I knew a little bit of English. I could communicate. So I started volunteering, taking them to the hospital, to the clinic, talking to doctors, interpreting, you know, speaking on their behalf. And the group started on, you know, forming bigger. Oh, Jean will take you, Jean will take you. So I did that for a few years, and I contacted my pastor in the church. So we used to do that together. So after 5 years, I came to Canada, and you know, it's mandatory. When you get here, you have to retest. I went to a Bridge Clinic, and I talked to one of the nurses. I was like, is there a way someone can be of help to the African community? And that's when they told me, there is a lady doing that, and maybe you can reach her, and she can take you around. So that's how I met patients. And then they had not formed the organization. So we sat down, we discussed, you know, what to do. And so that's how we met. And since then, we are walking the same journey.
That's amazing. And you're an assistant with the organization?
Yes. Yes.
Awesome. That's great.
Can I just interrupt? Just something really interesting that both of you have mentioned is the fact that when you arrive in Canada, you have to be retested for HIV. I'm just curious as to why they do that, if you know why. Because it just seems like it's no one's business.
Definitely, yes. When you're back home, there is that medical process.
Mm-hmm.
They test you, they give you your results,
mm-hmm.
and your results come with you.
Mm-hmm.
They even reach here ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
So when you come here, they already know of your status,
mm-hmm.
but now they want to open it up to you, you know, tell you, do you know that you're positive?
Mm-hmm.
So they run that test, and then they tell you, you're this, and you're going to start treatment.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, for me, I asked that question,
mm-hmm.
why we were tested. In fact, it's not all about HIV.
Mm-hmm.
We are tested for TB.
Okay.
Because at that time, I was so scared again, because I knew I was positive. It was so hard for me to go to have that HIV test.
Mm-hmm.
I was so scared. Anyway, it happened for a good reason, because I was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
It was, yes, I knew I was positive. And I asked my doctor, I asked the doctor who was doing the test why we were tested. And then they said, no, they want to know the government of wherever you are going, they want to know whether you're HIV positive or you have TB. And then I said, is HIV contagious?
Mm-hmm.
They said, no, but you have to be tested for both, because TB is contagious. Of which maybe that one, it was clear, I could understand why we tested,
mm-hmm.
because so that we get treatment for not spreading the disease.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But for HIV, I didn't get a clear answer of why people are tested. But anyway, maybe you sleep around with people and spread the disease, I
mm-hmm.
don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they send your results to Canada, to Ottawa, before
mm-hmm.
coming here.
Can I just ask, just backtracking a little bit, from the countries you're from in Africa and Zimbabwe and South Africa and Uganda and Rwanda, what is the sort of, is there stigma around HIV there, or how do people think about that disease there? Is it sort of accepted and understood, or is it sort of stigmatized like it is here?
It is there, definitely. Starting way back in 1986, when people came to know about HIV,
mm-hmm.
Some people ran out of their homes and they ran away. They thought maybe it was witchcraft or something. 31 years down the road, there is stigma still.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think this is a curse from God. Some people think this is promiscuity. And the people think this is a death sentence, you're definitely going to die. So some people don't want to associate with someone with HIV. They think it's a curse, you know, having that person in your family. Some of them even disown them. So it is there in a primitive setting. Here, it is here, you know, covered, you know, sugar-coated. But yeah, that distance, you know. They don't portray it like in Africa,
mm-hmm.
yeah. But definitely there is stigma here, and there is stigma back home.
Mm-hmm.
But back home, they throw it in your face, yes. So and when people come here, they have that fear, you know, the stigma back home. How are these people going to react when I tell them I'm positive?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they hide. They don't want to access services. They don't want to be seen in the hospitals. They want to come to the meetings, you know, meet other people.
Mm-hmm.
So they hide, and those are the dangers now of spreading the disease.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And talking about testing, when you come to Canada, you get tested.
Mm-hmm.
Only if you're a refugee.
Mm-hmm.
But not only refugees come to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
We have students coming to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
We have tourists coming to Canada. None of them is tested.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and you don't know. They come here 1 year, they go back.
Mm-hmm.
And you never see them.
Mm-hmm.
These tourists are here for only 3 months, they go back. You never see them. But these people who are funded by the government, because this is going to be their home,
mm-hmm.
they are tested.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a way CIC is doing it, but sorry to say, it's half-baked somehow.
Yeah.
Maybe if they could test everyone coming to Canada.
Yeah.
Canada is like a home to the world.
Mm-hmm.
So people come into Canada. It's a lovely country.
Mm-hmm.
But people are not safe.
Mm-hmm.
So people only... the government is focusing on those we know, those who are positive. You know?
So they don't test immigrants, just refugees specifically?
Just refugees. Only, if you come here and you declare yourself homeland...
Seek asylum.
Yeah, if you seek asylum, that's when you're going to be tested.
Okay.
If you stay quiet and you do your things for 1 year, no one will know your status.
Mm-hmm.
So how many people are you going to give the disease for that year?
Yeah.
And when you go back, who are they going to put in jail for 10 years? No. So they're going to see, okay, who did you sleep with? Oh, so-and-so. And people on treatment, they don't spread it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't spread it. So I don't know, maybe they'll think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then talk a bit more about the Afro-Canadian Positive Network that you both work for and that you started Patients. Can you talk a bit about the community it serves? You did a little bit already, but maybe a bit more. Like, who are you focusing on? It's immigrants from Africa? Is it mostly like women? Like, who do you serve primarily?
We serve men and women. The reason why we decided to found an organization for both men and women is because, like, every time we meet our doctor's appointment, we met guys who were very traumatized, who didn't have family, and also women.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, majority of our people in our organization is women, because women, they go through abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And also separation. We have kids who are from dysfunctional families because of separations.
Mm-hmm.
So women, they have so many challenges because they raise kids also as single parents. We also have men who are single parents who are struggling also with trauma. So our services, the way we provide our services equally the same. Like, we don't discriminate. We just serve them as people live with HIV. The challenges we're facing is mostly for government-assisted refugees and inland refugees, those who seek asylum here in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Inland refugees, they have so many challenges because they seek asylum in Canada. Anyway, we thank God because now the medication is covered.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't access medication in the past. So, yeah, we serve a marginalized community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we talk of refugees who don't have family. That is the biggest challenge people are facing. And also engaging in the community as a person living with HIV is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
HIV, that is why people die silent. Because at the moment you mention that you're HIV positive, it's a curse.
Mm-hmm.
That means everyone is going to die. And now, like so many families in Africa, my sister passed away, and everyone in the community, people are dying. Like, I know there's a lady who had 10 kids. All of them died of HIV, and they never even... It's misinformation anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to face the truth, face reality that HIV is a killer disease.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, there was no treatment, but people were dying, and they didn't even want to believe that the disease was... we were supposed to talk to anyone about it. So when we come to Canada again, having that mentality,
mm-hmm.
that is why people end up dying in silence.
Mm-hmm. Do you find through the organization that you are able to change that mentality a bit? Like, is that a really big struggle?
It's a struggle because, like, newcomers, when they come, like, we had one lady who came to Canada as an immigrant, and we're educating her on access to treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And it took her some time to access treatment because she had that mentality that the medication given to people here, given to African, it was poisonous because it was slow poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
Every African who used to access treatment here was going to die, like, silent. Of which it was not true, and all that education was from the negative community, and that's the challenge we're having. And also people end up having treatment fatigue. Mm-hmm. They give themselves drug a holiday, mm-hmm. which people get so tired. I feel tired most times, and also because of flashbacks, the trauma, it's ongoing trauma, like taking a pill every day, like for people like from Africa, it's not an easy thing because pill is not for us. We take herbs, and taking that pill at times, you feel so tired. Like we lost women last year, three ladies. They died of it was treatment fatigue.
Right.
So it's a challenge that people have, especially the fact that Africans, we don't rely on pills, we rely on herbs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it is a challenge because when you're in your second country, maybe when you're ready to come, there is a process, they call it orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So they tell you what to expect, where you're going, the do's and don'ts. So for those who are positive, they tell them if you get there and you happen to infect someone, you will be criminalized.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they take that like criminalized. So
mm-hmm.
when they come here, they keep quiet. Like,
mm-hmm.
find someone, you're like, okay, why don't you access service? Like, hey, I don't want anyone to know because I don't want to go back to Africa.
Yeah.
Why? Because it's a crime to be positive in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So they get it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So they need someone to talk to them. No, it's still a crime if you infect someone.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely you're going to infect someone if you don't take your meds.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing to do is get out, get treatment, and you'll be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there, it's a journey. It's a process. And getting out that person to come and access treatment is not easy.
Yeah.
They have to trust you. They have to be close to you and, know that, there is confidentiality here.
Yeah.
No one in the community will know. So it's, that's the game.
Yeah, like we get calls every time from Fraser Health.
Like
a month ago, they called. They were talking about a woman who's not accessing treatment from Africa. And they gave her my number to talk to me. But she hasn't called up to now.
Right.
And also there's one lady who passed away and left three kids because of stigmas. It's a journey. It's a challenge. And again, without funding, at times we are overwhelmed because mostly it's two of us working in the organization.
Yeah.
We have a volunteer. She just got a job and she's working now. And most times it's so hard to reach out to the entire community because we have so many people and we have one outreach worker and also she's having kids. She volunteers sometimes, not all the time. That's the biggest challenge we're facing. Like refugees are coming every day. We have a guy now who are working with finding housing and all those kind of things. It's not easy.
And how many people would you say access your services?
Now we have 82.
Oh, yeah. And you're the only organization providing these services in BC? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the only African organization. It's not like Toronto where they have
a
number of agencies helping newcomers like the Africans. And to change people's mentality, you need proper education.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's so difficult to reach out to them in the community because they're not engaged at all because of that stigma.
One thing I wanted to ask a little bit about was the healthcare services in BC and how people are able to navigate them as new immigrants and people who are HIV positive. Like, have you found that to be a positive experience? Like, service providers are really willing to help you, or have you found that there has been some challenges in finding services that meet the needs of your community?
It's a challenge here in British Columbia. Is one of the best provinces when it comes to medical.
Yeah.
We are the best. But when it comes to education, lack of education is huge here.
Mm-hmm.
And also engaging people in the community, I feel is something which we have to work on,
mm-hmm.
like together as a community and also the health sector.
Mm-hmm.
like, lack of funding is huge. Like, as you know, that there are organizations which are shutting down across nationally. It's not provincial, national agencies are shutting down because of lack of funding.
Mm-hmm.
And all that is a factor, because you find people there are no services. Like I'm talking of British Columbia, PWN, they've closed their doors, and now all the women, they don't even know where to go.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who are not comfortable working with black people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we had come up with the strategy of working together with agencies, like referring our people to PWN so that maybe they can provide that education. Again, the way other agencies work is not compared to, like, it's not the same as the way we work 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever there's a need, it doesn't matter what time.
Mm-hmm.
When we were new, all of us, we used to travel at night, supporting one another. It was loneliness, and people were... It was so hard for them to fight whatever challenges they were going through. So I feel the community, we have to come together as a community and also work together with the hospitals, because hospitals, they have more knowledge than us in terms of statistics, like people living with HIV, and also people who are having challenges of not accessing treatment. I feel that's when we have to come together and support. Because when I was talking to Fraser Health, when they were calling me about this lady, and then I said, what do you think needs to be done? And then they said that there's nothing they can do if someone doesn't want to access treatment. But I feel something has to be done. Because, like, sharing information, we can visit that person and sit down and talk to that person in our language. Because most of them, they cannot express themselves because of the culture shock, of which we need to kind of work something together as a community, especially with the health sector, to find out how best we can save lives. Because if at all something was done, we're not going to lose all these ladies. Like, people dying in Canada, it's a shame. Because we feel something was not done. We have to do something as a community. Because, like, in Africa, losing someone, it's not like losing a fly, losing something. A human being is valued. Like, that's why in our funerals, you have like 5,000 people going to a funeral bearing someone.
Is access to the antiviral drugs for HIV-positive individuals, is it free, or are people able to get it at a low cost? How does that work?
It's, I think, Canada-wide.
It's
free.
Oh, great.
It's free, and I mean, if it's very expensive, but the government covers that, and everyone has access to that. That's the good thing. And that's what we tell people, those who don't want to access it. You're like, if you really think right, you need to take this. It's really good. Within a short time, you will be undetectable.
Yeah.
I mean, people come here with zero viral, zero CD4, and millions of viral.
Right.
So within 2 months, CD4 count is good, the viral load is low, you're undetectable.
Right.
Yeah. So.
But then, even if you are taking that medication and your viral load is undetectable, are you still legally obligated to tell sexual partners that you have HIV?
Yes, you are. You are. Though you're not going to transmit the disease, but you need to disclose.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, HIV medication here is free. And also, even to those who are not on PWD, it's free. Even if, no matter how much you make a month, still the HIV track is free, like, across Canada. But still, my question all the time is, why people are dying? Something needs to be done, because we cannot stand to see all these people. We are still grieving. We cannot stand to see our people dying. Something has to be. The health sector, they keep on saying, there's nothing they can do. I feel there's something we can do as a community
mm-hmm.
to save lives. Because it's a shame to see people dying in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are dying every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's only that at times we don't get that information. What about in Africa? People are traveling like 10 kilometers to access treatment, care and treatment. And here in Canada, we get our meds at a doorstep.
Yeah.
The thing is, why do people still don't want to access treatment? Our people from Africa, I mean, when you see the treatment in Africa and when you see the treatment here, it's different. In Africa, they still take the 6 pills, the 3 pills, and the side effect is really visible.
Mm-hmm.
So people refuse to take treatment, even here. Many reasons, but one of them is side effects.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is when someone will tell, oh, you are positive. Because they're going to have rashes, they're going to look weird, they're going to lose weight when they start taking their treatment. Not in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
In Canada, you won't even see that.
Mm-hmm.
So they still have that mentality of back home, people they've seen dying, the rashes on faces of people, so they're scared. They need someone to educate them, to tell them. Yeah.
And because of stigma, we cannot do it alone.
Mm-hmm.
We really need... to work together as a community.
Right.
Because like most people that are in hiding, they don't even want to talk to an African. Like Jean is coming from Africa. He cannot, there are people who are not comfortable working
mm-hmm.
with Jean as an African, but they are comfortable working with white people.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to work together to fight the stigma
mm-hmm.
and also to bring awareness in our community, including politicians, health, especially the health sector.
Mm-hmm.
The health sector, they know what they know,
right.
but when it comes to HIV, we are the experts,
right.
of which they cannot walk that journey alone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why people are discriminated in hospitals to the extent that people stop accessing
right.
care and treatment, and because of the discrimination.
Right.
So we need to provide education,
mm-hmm.
bring awareness together. But now the health sector is my main concern.
Mm-hmm. So would you say then that in the health sector there's a lack of sensitivity and education, but that is kind of coupled with racism?
Yes, mostly.
Yeah,
yeah, especially here in Suri. Suri is far away behind when you compare it with other places,
mm-hmm.
but other cities across British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that because when I started engaging in the community, I used to, everything I was doing was in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
All the workshops, you find everyone coming up to the whole of BC, Prince George, Kelowna.
Mm-hmm.
People are engaged, but I never even saw anyone from Surrey in the health sector.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was asking one time what really is going on. And I was even asking Oakley that they should talk to Suri and engage them.
Mm-hmm.
Even this agency here in Suri, they were not engaged in all the programs in Vancouver
mm-hmm.
and all the conferences around British Columbia,
mm-hmm.
of which they need education.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to backpedal a little bit because
mm-hmm.
Patience is talking quite a bit about PWN, which is the Positive Women's Network.
I was
going to
ask about that.
And so they recently shut down because of a lack of funding. And have you found that the scarcity of funding has affected the way that people kind of learn more about HIV, like the way that information is distributed and what would, like, how would more funding maybe improve the situation for people living with HIV?
I think the closing of these organizations, once you see one organization closing their doors, another one closing their doors, it's a grave mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's dangerous to
yeah.
the community.
Mm-hmm.
Because these women, I mean, they've been in that organization for maybe 10 years, 7 years, they've, you know, gained that confidence with that organization.
Mm-hmm.
So once you tell them, oh, that organization is no more,
mm-hmm.
oh, they're going to be depressed.
Yeah.
So they have to find another organization, start building that confidence again,
yeah.
and it's not good.
Mm-hmm. And why are these organizations that help people with HIV
lack
closing?
Of funding.
But is there a particular
instigator of that lack of funding? Like, do you know? It's just sort of happening right now more so?
Okay. Yeah, I think the federal government is, they have that line of HIV is manageable,
mm-hmm.
or HIV is no longer a threat.
Right.
So that's how wrong they get it.
Mm-hmm.
It is manageable, but it's still a killer disease.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't educate people, if people don't stick on their medication, if people don't disclose and worry and take care of their CD4s and viral loads, they're going to infect others. So it is not that manageable as they think.
Right.
It's a continuous journey.
So perhaps the lack of funding is tied to the government not seeing it as much of a threat.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Lack of funding is part of it, but when you look at Afro-Canadian and how we operate, it's not all about money. Whatever we do is all about love,
mm-hmm.
because we are not Canadians. Anyway, we are Canadians by paper. We are Canadians by paper, but the love we have for one another,
yeah.
is like, every Canadian is like a home.
Yeah.
We chose to found this organization to bring your home away from home. We, in Africa, we say your pain is my pain. So in everything we do as a community at Afro-Canadian, we are trying our level best to be there for one another,
mm-hmm.
to support one another. Like, we are aunties, we are uncles, and we support one another like family.
Mm-hmm.
So shutting down Afro-Canadian is like you're shutting down your home, and where will we go, all of us?
Mm-hmm.
So organizations are shutting down, but our priority is family. With or without funding, we still exist.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had funding for like how many years now?
And 15, almost 3.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But we still exist, we still work, like we still support one another, we still contribute from our pockets. Like,
mm-hmm.
from day one we founded the organization, we contributed from our pockets because we saw the need. This organization is for and by people live with HIV.
Mm-hmm.
The moment we shut down this organization, it means everyone is going to die.
Mm-hmm.
We won't have a home where we're going to cry to. People call, they come to our office. Our role is to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have anyone to listen to you, what will happen in the end?
Mm-hmm.
When you say in Africa, and I always tell people this, in Africa, everybody in Africa is affected by HIV in one way or the other. You've lost a friend, you've lost a schoolmate, you've lost a sister, brother. Somehow, somewhere, you are affected. Maybe you're not infected, but you are affected. So here in ASEPNET, we have that mentality, like, we have to step in. It's not about money,
mm-hmm.
but I can have gas in my car, drive, go see a sister,
mm-hmm.
Drive a sister to an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
So we still have that door open,
mm-hmm.
without funding for almost 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not easy in Canada. It's not easy.
It's not easy.
We are Canadians. We are proud Canadians. And we love it here.
Yeah, Canada is the best country. Anyway, we feel so blessed to be in Canada,
yeah.
because when we look back where we're coming from, all our peers, a number of them passed away because of hunger. Poverty is huge in
mm-hmm.
Africa, and there's no way you can access treatment without food.
Mm-hmm.
So we are so blessed. Everything is at the doorstep. They deliver our meds, they deliver our food, everything. We are so blessed anyway. But now we cannot, we support one another. Like, we do hospital visits,
mm-hmm.
home visits. So, like, for those who have challenges, even we babysit for one another. He
mm-hmm.
used to babysit my son when I used to go to conferences,
yeah.
when my son was a child.
Yeah,
so we babysit for one another. We just give support to one another.
Right.
It's family.
And for anyone who's maybe listening in and is wondering how they can support the work that you're both doing, how could someone do that if they wanted to support the organization?
Right now, our website is not
under construction.
Yeah, it's under construction.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That would be easy, donating on the website. But sending us a check, Afro-Canadian Positive Network,
yeah.
you know, Mm-hmm. However much you can send, you know, that can be helpful.
Yeah.
I had a project last year of engaging the youth, to educate the youth through music, dance, and drama.
Mm-hmm.
We did that for some time, and because of funding, we couldn't move on. So we need that. We need to sensitize the community, especially young people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, HIV is not taught here in schools, and you'll never hear that on radios or on TV. I mean, we're not talking about, oh, use a condom, but no, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way they talk about Hep C and cancer, it's not different. You know, they
yeah.
could talk about it, but so we wanted to educate young people,
mm-hmm.
you know, be careful, you know,
mm-hmm.
Go for testing,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, be supportive.
Yeah.
You know, HIV is not, you know, we proceed that if you touch someone, you're going to get
yeah.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but be careful.
Mm-hmm. And like you say, HIV is no different than cancer or hepatitis or whatever, but do you think that it is designated as separate and different because of this sort of tie to morality? Like, you did something bad?
Yes, exactly. I mean, when you
yeah.
talk about cancer, you know, cancer is something you can easily discuss and say, oh, my mom's dying of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You will not even talk about a friend dying of HIV.
Mm-hmm.
No, because it's tied to promiscuity.
Yeah.
You know, they say, oh, you did it, you know, you deserve it, or
mm-hmm.
you cheated on your wife, or your husband, or you
mm-hmm.
whore, or, you know, those things.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's why everyone tends to, you know, distance.
Yeah.
But it's not different.
No.
It's not. Lots of things are wrong, cursing, swearing, stealing,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you see many of these women, some of them are innocent. They even don't know how they got it.
Yeah.
Even these men, you know, you cannot just go there and say, this is HIV, I'm going to get it. No,
yeah.
you know, happens to happen.
Yeah,
yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, to add on to that, like you said, we provide education through drama and music,
mm-hmm.
like the way back in Africa. In Africa, HIV was introduced in schools. I remember when I was a teacher, I was teaching elementary, grade 1 to 3. We're given a topic every term.
Mm-hmm.
In Africa, it's like 4 terms, right? So every term we're given a topic, like to compose a song, drama, music, and we used to have competitions. And then that's how we're educating the community. Here, mostly people from Africa, they're impacted by language barrier,
mm-hmm.
of which they cannot even understand whatever you say to them, because they cannot express themselves, they cannot even understand the language. So, like, lack of funding, it has affected us so much, because all our kids were engaged,
mm-hmm.
and he was the leader of the group,
mm-hmm.
and we were educating our kids every time they used to come during the day after school and have that program. Now our kids are in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we get news all the time, they're taking drugs, and also they're not fully engaged because of lack of funding. We are trying to bring our kids together. It's not easy, it's a challenge because of lack of funding. And also our women, they used to have a women's program. Not anymore, women are not engaged in the program, and
mm-hmm.
it's so hard for them to make ends meet, they cannot even get jobs. So we're looking forward to have a program where they will be maybe working like as peers,
mm-hmm.
and educate in their original languages, because it's not that they are ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
They have skills way back from Africa. We want them to practice their skills here in Canada and also support their families.
So would it be fair to say that a lot of what the Afro-Canadian Positive Network does is provide basic sort of immigration services too? Like, do you guys help people find like English classes and connect with basic services in the Lower Mainland?
We do referrals, because right now we cannot provide those classes on our own because we don't have funding.
Mm-hmm.
But we do referrals, we refer people to ESL classes,
mm-hmm.
and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted to do it on our own.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
first of all, we don't have space, we don't
yeah.
have equipment. That's something we see that we will do in the future.
Yeah.
out if we get funding?
Yeah, if there are people who could help, the most important thing, we are looking for our own office. As we are renting here, people are overwhelmed whenever they find that we talk about HIV. I remember we had a third anniversary in this building. Mm-hmm. It was like 100 people in the building. Every time I had a booth, my table was by the corner up there. And then I displayed my stuff. And it was only 5 people who had tables. So every time they came to me, they wanted to know about what we do. Mm-hmm. And they found out that we talk about HIV. No one was interested at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we need some privacy. Like the mm-hmm. office in that place where we used to, it was our own office, we had our own washrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And people learning, like we were discriminated one day when we were sharing an office because the guy, when they came to know that we were HIV positive, the guy went to complain to the landlord that he doesn't want to share what a washroom with us
mm-hmm.
and also to share a kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So that made me so angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to the landlord called me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, you know what? I didn't say anything on that day. After days, I called the manager. I said, please, I really want to educate these guys. Is it okay if you could come to my office? He said, they will never come to your office. And then we went to their office. That's when I provided that education piece, that mm-hmm. HIV is not contagious.
Mm-hmm.
So we need privacy, and also our people, they don't feel comfortable coming to offices like that because they will meet people they know.
Mm-hmm.
And then we need our own space. Once we have our own space, that's when we are going to have a number of programs in a confidentiality way.
Mm-hmm.
And also we need money for the programs and also to save our kids. As I mentioned, our kids are in the streets,
mm-hmm.
and there's little we can do right now, even reaching out to them to help them. It's so hard, and we don't even know where to refer them.
Yeah.
Because here, there's no programs for drugs or whatever. I don't think so.
Right.
There's only a shelter across the here in Wali.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a lot of services.
Yeah, there are no services here. So, like if our kids are affected, like women are traumatized right now because mm-hmm. of what is going on in the community.
And I used to talk to the kids, and you see them all, you know, kind of overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once a kid finds out, oh, my mom is this, my dad is this,
mm-hmm.
they start thinking, oh, he's gonna die, or I'm gonna mm-hmm. be an orphan. You know,
mm-hmm.
those things. That's when they go off track.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk to them, they're like, you don't know what I'm going through.
Right.
Yeah. So, but you know what they're going through. And you try to talk to them, and sometimes they listen to you. Sometimes they don't want to come back. You have to follow up, you know, those things. Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard. It sounds like the journey of kind of living with HIV or knowing someone who's living with HIV can be really isolating for some people, and what you are both doing is providing that sense of community, so you're not having to deal with that
mm-hmm.
all on your own.
Yeah, and also for the women, we appreciate Shona, because Shona, they came mm-hmm. to our rescue.
Yeah.
Because having that photo voice project around last year, almost end of the month, women were fully engaged. You could see that they were very happy
mm-hmm.
because coming together all the time. We used to have focus groups, not anymore. We used to have community gatherings end of the month. We
mm-hmm.
come together with our kids. We cook together. We eat. Not anymore. Now the women, they keep on asking me of what is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
They really want to come together. And even when they were doing that Shona project, they even mentioned that they wanted to come together to have a dancing group or
mm-hmm.
have doing arts and crafts, and then they will have a market where they will sell their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a challenge.
What is the group? Sorry? The Shona group?
It's GSHI.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the GHSI.
Yeah, yeah.
That's providing.
Yeah, they gave us more support that time because that program was a 6-week program, and also participating in the study. Receiving that $50 was a lot for them
mm-hmm.
because we all have challenges. For me, I'm on disability, I don't have a job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also going through challenges. And look at women with language barrier.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot even get a job elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they cannot help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
These are challenges people face in their everyday life.
And the GHSI is the Global Health...
Gender Sexuality Health Initiative.
Yeah. Which focuses on doing studies on sexual health and...
Women's health.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So. Yeah, and also the biggest challenge we have... We have, like I mentioned, we have 82 members.
Mm-hmm.
I think from the 82, we only have 7 guys.
Mm-hmm.
And men are not engaged enough in the community.
Mm-hmm.
We are so proud of Jean,
mm-hmm.
of Jean, of what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And also even the number of guys, some of them, they are not active at all. We have a number, from that 82, it's only a few active members.
Mm-hmm.
All of them, because like whenever they meet in gatherings, from their countries of origin, they cannot come again. They cannot come back again.
Mm-hmm.
Gossip is huge in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't want to socialize with people from their countries of origin.
Right.
So for men, we also need a men's program to engage a number of... I just got the news on Thursday,
mm-hmm.
that there's a guy from Vancouver who passed away from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I met that guy once, but he never wanted to talk to me. Because he heard that I was helping people live with HIV. And people most times are scared of me because knowing me, it means you are HIV positive too.
Mm-hmm.
Of which we have to break that stigma,
yeah.
to engage more people and also having a program for men,
right.
so that men will come maybe one day and then they have to share their stories. That's what is important, to
right.
open up. The moment you don't open up, that's when you die of loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the setting we have here is not conducive for members.
Right.
Sometimes they come and they start looking around, people are seeing them,
mm-hmm.
they don't come back.
Right. And just for listeners, we're in a shared office
yeah.
space, so yeah.
You need a place whereby you close the door and talk to someone, you know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And,
you know, that's when they feel, you know, peaceful and they're like, no one has seen me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we work from home most times, because
mm-hmm.
if ever... someone is in need, and then they visit you at home,
mm-hmm.
and then we educate that person one-on-one. And also, language barrier.
Mm-hmm.
We have peers who educate one-on-one in their respective languages,
mm-hmm.
because some of them, they cannot even speak a word in
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes you need to be like three. If you get like someone from Somalia,
yeah.
and you're doing the intake, so you need someone from Somalia, an interpreter, and yourself.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Africa is big, you cannot
yeah.
speak all the languages.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, the challenge, the most important challenge is funding, office space, and also stigma.
Mm-hmm.
We need to fight stigma, because without coming together as a community,
right.
we're still going to find cases of deaths happening.
Out of the stigma, I know this is something that we've talked about a little bit, patients, but there's a lot of misinformation that gets spread about HIV, and that can have negative effects on people's health and outcomes. Maybe could you talk about that a little bit, the misinformation that gets spread about living with HIV?
I mean, yeah, and those are the information people tend to stick on, those
yeah.
are wrong information. It's
yeah.
like, you know, these their special treatments they give to Africans.
Yeah.
That's very wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same, you know, the white people take, the black people take, the Asians take. It's the
mm-hmm.
same medication.
Yeah.
So once they are told, like, these meds you take is for depopulation,
mm-hmm.
you know, that those conspiracy theories,
yeah.
like they want to cut down the number of people, especially Africans.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take it, 1 year you'll die.
Mm-hmm.
So those information people hide. They're like, I won't take it.
Right.
People now tend to take wrong information, like, go to church, the pastor will pray for you and you'll be healed.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen people, you know, bedridden because of lies from pastors.
Mm-hmm.
They quit their treatment. They start fasting and praying. I tell people, pray for your meds, take it and it will be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't quit your meds, and don't stop praying. Praying is good, but
mm-hmm.
pray for your meds as you pray for food.
Mm-hmm.
Pray for meds and take it, and you'll be fine. So, you know, those lies, they are sweet and, you know, quick, I've seen people being healed. It's wrong. We've never seen one.
Mm-hmm.
It's wrong. Yeah. But I can say I've seen someone living for 35 years with HIV.